Hello and welcome to Speak the Words, a Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Mango.
Before we jump into the episode, I just want to go ahead and give you guys the normal spiel of like, hey, we're on Twitter at Speak Stormlight. And also, we have a Discord server. The link to join that is in the episode description. I know you don't, but I'm going to ask you anyways.
I don't remember what happened last time.
Cool. The smallest storyline, or the shortest storyline, was Adolin's. But there was still some interesting stuff in there. Adolin met with Esher and I.
Oh, yeah.
And Esher and I was like, hey. Renarin supposedly tried to join the battle, but had a fit. But then later, Renarin told Adolin that he didn't have a fit, that he's just a coward.
Poor guy.
Poor Renarin. And that was pretty much all of Adolin's storyline. There was a bunch with Shallan. So we'll save Shallan for the last. Kaladin had to ride a horse. But he also realized that whoever cut the railing that Elokar almost fell off of must have done it after the high storm, because the high storm would have blown the railing away if it had been done before. And one of the other bridgemen told him that they saw Moash go out onto the balcony after the high storm.
And then for a minute, Kaladin was like watching Moash, but then he was like, why would it be Moash?
That's stupid, yeah. Shallan, like you said, Shallan and Kaladin met, and Shallan took his boots.
Yep.
And Shallan also kind of just hung out with Tin for a bit. Tin kind of is guiding Shallan. Yeah, Tin is like teaching Shallan a little bit how to be a con woman, but Shallan also kind of is too good for what Tin is trying to teach her. But Tin did say that she had information coming about Shallan's homeland later. I'm trying to think. There was one Sadeus chapter, which was weird, but pretty much Sadeus just talked to Amaram, and Amaram was like,
"Haha,
yeah, dude, I'm Amaram. We're both assholes."
Yep.
But Amaram keeps talking to everybody like he has a higher purpose. He keeps being like, for the good of Alethkar, we all need to be united, because what is coming is going to test us all. Like, he keeps giving vague speeches to everybody. And then we had one Shallan flashback, but it was just more of her family is not okay.
Her brother was drunk, right? And they were gonna go.
Her brother
to
was drunk. Yeah, her brother was drunk. One of her brothers was starting fires. It's all bad. Helleran's missing. And then we left off where everybody was pretty much chilling as a high storm was coming.
Oh, yeah.
But this week, we start with episode 8. We start with episode 8. This
episode
week, we start
eight.
With chapter 32.
Jedi.
This is episode 8. Yeah, this is episode 8. We're starting with chapter 32, titled The One Who Hates. And it has Kaladin's symbol, and the epigraph reads, "The Spren betrayed us, it's often felt. Our minds are too close to their realm. That gives us our forms, but more is then demanded by the smartest Spren. We can't provide what the humans lend. Though broth are we, their meat is men." From the Listener Song of Spren, ninth stanza.
Huh. So they don't like the Spren either.
They feel that the Spren betrayed them.
By giving powers to humans.
I will not talk any more about that.
So by giving powers to humans. Okay. Cool.
I'm not confirming or denying that. I'm just saying that the relationship between the listeners and the Spren is not anything I will expand upon further, or even the backstory of the listeners outside of what the books tell you. This chapter starts, "In his dream, Kaladin was the storm. A face as large as eternity stretched behind him, the force behind the tempest, the storm father himself. Son of honor," said a voice. "This is real," Kaladin yelled into the storm. "You are real. She trusts you. Syl? Yes, she does. She should not. Are you the one who forbade her to come to me? Are you the one who keeps the Spren back? You will kill her. You will murder my child and leave her corpse to wicked men. I will not. You begin it already. How can I prevent it? How can I protect her? You are human. You will be a traitor. No, I won't. You will change. Men change. All men. Ah, so it will end. What? Kaladin shouted into the winds. What changed? I feel... He comes for you, little traitor. I am sorry. Something rose before Kaladin. A second storm. One of red lightning. Everything fell into its shadow. I am sorry, the Stormfather said. He comes. Kaladin awoke. Adolin stood nearby, talking to Renarin. I'm not sure if anything will come from the meeting, but I'm glad Father agreed to it. I'd almost given up hope of it happening, with how long the Parshendi messenger took to arrive. You're sure the one you'd met out there was a woman? Renarin asked. A woman shardbearer? The Parshendi are pretty odd, Adolin said with a shrug. He glanced toward Kaladin, and his lip rose in a smirk. Sleeping on the job, bridge boy? Navani and Dalinar would be in the room next door. The king wasn't there. His Majesty, Kaladin cried, scrambling to his feet. In the privy, bridge boy, Adolin said. You can sleep during a high storm. That's impressive. Almost as impressive as how much you drool when you're dozing. No time for jibes. That dream. Kaladin turned toward the balcony door, breathing quickly. He comes. Kaladin pulled open the balcony door. Adolin shouted and Renarin called out, but Kaladin ignored them, facing the tempest. The bulk of the high storm had passed. Darkness. He felt as if he was standing above the void itself. Damnation, known as Brays in the old songs, home to demons and monsters. Are you mad? Adolin demanded. Kaladin could barely hear his voice over the wind and distant rumbles of thunder. We cut to Shallan's point of view. Pattern hummed softly as rain fell on the wagon. She wished she could quiet the blasted Spren, but Pattern wasn't responding to her promptings. Pattern's hum sounded almost like a whimper. Shallan frowned and leaned down close to him. Were those words? Bad, bad, so bad. And we cut back to Kaladin's POV. Syl shot out of the high storm's dense darkness, a sudden flash of light in the black. Syl looked into the sky, then turned her head sharply over her shoulder. Kaladin, something is wrong. I know. Her small eyes opened wide. He's coming. Who, the storm? The one who hates, she whispered. The darkness inside. Kaladin, he's watching. Something's going to happen. Something bad. Kaladin hesitated only a moment, then scrambled back into the room, pushing past Adolin. Get the king. We're leaving. Now. What? Adolin demanded. Kaladin threw open the door into the small room where Dalinar and Navani waited. Kaladin froze. He sees things during the storms. What are you doing? Navani demanded. How dare you? Can you wake him? Kaladin asked, stepping into the room. We need to leave this room. Leave this palace. Nonsense. It was the king's voice. Elokar stepped into the room behind him. What are you babbling about? You're not safe here, your majesty, Kaladin said. We need to get you out of the palace and take you to the war camp. The storm was dying. This is ridiculous, Adolin said, throwing his hands into the air. This is the safest place in the war camps. You want us to leave? Drag the king out into the storm? We need to wake the High Prince, Kaladin said, reaching for Dalinar. Dalinar caught his arm as he did so. The High Prince is awake, Dalinar said. What is going on here? The bridge boy wants us to evacuate the palace, Adolin said. Soldier, Dalinar asked. It's not safe here, sir. What makes you say that? Instinct, sir. The room grew still. We go then, Dalinar said, rising. What? The king demanded. You put this man in charge of your guard, Elokar, Dalinar said. If he thinks our position is not safe, we should do as he says. There was an implied for now after that sentence, but Kaladin didn't care. He shoved past the king and Adolin, rushing back through the main chamber. Kaladin threw open the doors. 6 men stood on watch in the hallway. We're leaving, Kaladin said. Beld and Hopper, you're an advance squad. Scout the way out of the building, the back way, down through the kitchens, and give a shout if you see anything unusual. Moash, you and Ralinor are the rear guard. Watch this room until I've got the king and the High Prince out of sight, then follow. Martineth, you stay at the king's side, no matter what. The guards scrambled into action without question. As the scouts ran ahead, Kaladin moved back to the king and grabbed him by the arm, then hauled him toward the door. Elokar allowed it, a stunned expression on his face. The other light eyes followed. The Bridgeman brothers Martineth fell in, flanking the king. Moash holding the doorway. He gripped his spear nervously, pointing it in one direction, then another. Kaladin rushed the king and his family down the corridor along the chosen path. The hallways were silent. Everyone was sheltering in their rooms during the high storm. Dalinar joined Kaladin at the front of the group. I will be curious to hear exactly what prompted this soldier, he said, once we are safely evacuated. My Spren is having a fit, Kaladin thought, watching her zip back and forth in the corridor. That's what prompted it. How is he going to explain that? Kaladin froze in place. The lights ahead were out, the corridor dimming into the distance until it was dark as a mine. Wait, Adolin said, stopping in place. Why is it dark? What happened to the spheres? They've been drained of light. A doorway had been cut into this corridor from the outside, sliced directly through the rock. Kaladin's light also illuminated something on the floor just ahead, a body lying where corridors crossed. Beld, one of the men Kaladin had sent on ahead. The huddle of people stared at the body in horror. "He's here," Syl whispered. A solemn figure stepped out of the side corridor, holding a long silvery blade that cut a trail in the stone floor. The figure had flowing white clothing, filmy trousers, and an overshirt that rippled with each step. Bald head, pale skin. Shin. Kaladin recognized the figure. The assassin in white. Stormlight streamed from the assassin's body. He was a Surgebinder. "Adolin, with me," Dalinar shouted. "Renarin, protect the king. Take him back the way we came." With that, Dalinar, the Blackthorn, seized a spear from one of Kaladin's men and charged the assassin. "He's going to get himself killed," Kaladin thought, running after him. "Go with Prince Renarin," he yelled at his men. "Do as he tells you. Protect the king." The men began a frantic retreat, towing away Navani and the king. "Father," Renarin cried. Moash grabbed him by the shoulder and hauled him back. "I can fight." "Go," Dalinar bellowed. "Protect the king." As Kaladin charged with Dalinar and Adolin, the last thing he heard of the group was King Elokar's whimpering voice. "He's come for me. I always knew he would. Like he came for father."
"Bet she's not after you."
The assassin in white stood calmly in the corridor, streaming with his own light. How could he be a Surgebinder? What Spren had chosen this man? Adolin's shard blade formed in his hands. "Trident," Dalinar said. "I'm the middle. You familiar with that, Kaladin?" "Yes, sir." "Let me handle this, father," Adolin said. "He has a shard blade, and I don't like the look of that glow." "No," Dalinar said. "We hit him together." "I'm not asleep at the table this time, you bastard. You're not taking another one from me." The three charged together. Dalinar is the middle of the trident, Kaladin and Adolin attacking from the side. They charged in a rush to confuse and overwhelm. The assassin waited until they were close, then jumped, trailing light. He twisted in the air as Dalinar thrust with his spear. The assassin did not come down. Instead, he landed on the ceiling of the corridor some 12 feet above. "It's true," Adolin said. He raised his shard blade to attack at the awkward angle. The assassin ran down the wall, batting aside Adolin's shard blade with his own, then slammed his head and his hand into Adolin's chest. Adolin flipped upward as if he'd been tossed. His body streamed stormlight and he crashed into the ceiling above. "Stormfather," Kaladin thought. He thrust his spear alongside that of the Blackthorn in an attempt to hit the assassin. The man didn't dodge. Both spears struck flesh, Dalinar's in the shoulder, Kaladin's in the side. The assassin spun, sweeping his shard blade through the spears and cutting them in half. He lunged forward, slapping Dalinar across the face, sending him sprawling to the ground, then swept his blade toward Kaladin. Kaladin barely ducked the blow, then scrambled backward. The assassin stood poised and confident in the center of the corridor. Stormlight swirled in the slashes in his now reddened clothing, healing his flesh. Kaladin backed away. The things this man did. He couldn't be a Windrunner, could he? Impossible. "Father!" Adolin shouted from above. The youth had climbed to his feet. He tried to attack the assassin, but slipped from the ceiling and crashed to the ground. His shard blade vanished as it fell from his fingers. The assassin stepped over Adolin, who stirred but did not rise. "I am sorry," the assassin said, stormlight streaming from his mouth. "I don't want to do this." "I won't give you the chance," Kaladin growled, dashing forward. He came at the assassin with the remnant of his spear wielded like a quarterstaff. He forgot his worries, forgot his failures, forgot even his rage. Just Kaladin and a spear, as the world was meant to be. The assassin took a blow to the shoulder, then the side. The assassin cursed and backed away. Kaladin sucked in the rest of his stormlight, so little. He hadn't picked up new spheres before coming to guard duty. Stupid. Sloppy. The assassin lifted his shard blade, preparing to thrust. There, Kaladin thought. He would twist around the strike, bringing up the butt of his spear. It would hit the assassin on the side of the head, a powerful blow that even Stormlight would not easily compensate for. He'd be left dazed and opening. I have him. Somehow, the assassin twisted out of the way. He moved too quickly, faster than Kaladin anticipated. As quickly as Kaladin himself. Kaladin's blow found only open air, and he narrowly avoided being run through by the shard blade. Kaladin's next moves came by instinct. If he'd been fighting an ordinary foe, the way he automatically shifted his weapon to block the next swing would have been perfect. But the assassin had a shard blade. Kaladin's instincts betrayed him. The silvery weapon sheared through the remnant of Kaladin's spear, then through Kaladin's right arm, just below the elbow. A shock of incredible pain washed through Kaladin, and he gasped, falling to his knees. Then, nothing. He couldn't feel the arm. It turned gray and dull, lifeless, the palm opening, fingers spreading as half of his spear shaft dropped from his fingers and thumped to the ground. The assassin kicked Kaladin out of the way, slamming him against the wall. The man in the white clothing turned up the corridor in the direction the king had gone. He again stepped over Adolin. "Kaladin," Syl said. I can't beat him, Kaladin whispered, tears in his eyes. Tears of pain, tears of frustration. He's one of us. A Radiant. No, Syl said forcefully. No, he's something far more terrible. No Spren guides him, Kaladin. Please, get up. Dalinar had regained his feet in the corridor between the assassin and the path to the king. The Blackthorn's cheek was a bloody mess, but his eyes were lucid. I won't let you have him, Dalinar bellowed. Not Elokar. You took my brother. You won't take the only thing I have left of him. The assassin stopped in the corridor just in front of Dalinar. But I'm not here for him, High Prince, he whispered. I'm here for you. The assassin lunged forward, slapping away Dalinar's strike, and kicked the Blackthorn in the leg. Dalinar went down on one knee. A frigid wind blew into the corridor through the opening in the wall just beside him. Kaladin growled, forcing himself to stand and charge down the corridor, one hand useless and dead. He'd never wield a spear again. He couldn't think about that. He had to reach Dalinar. Too slow. I'm going to fail. The assassin swung his terrible blade down in a final overhead sweep. Dalinar did not dodge. Instead, he caught the blade. Dalinar brought the heels of his palms together as the blade fell and caught it just before it hit. The assassin grunted in surprise. At that moment, Kaladin plowed into him using his weight and momentum to throw the assassin against the wall. Except there wasn't a wall here. They hit the place where the assassin had cut his entrance into the corridor. Both tumbled out into the open air. Yeah, Dalinar caught the flat edges of the blade.
Oh my... And, like, didn't hurt himself in the process?
Yeah, so shard blades will only cut through with the sharp edge.
Badass.
So this is a really dumb thing that people have talked about, and Sanderson has semi-canonized, but technically, cheese could slow down a shard blade. Because of the way cheese, like, molecules work, technically it would slow down the sharp edge of the blade.
Why?
I don't know. There's something about cheese. Cheese slows down a knife for some reason.
Is it because part of it is, like, cheese is considered rotten, but it's still safe to eat?
No, it's something about the actual molecular makeup of cheese that would slow down a shard blade. It's weird, but they had, like,
is it maybe just particularly dense or something?
It might be. I just remember I was watching one of the live streams recently and somebody asked That's Sanderson weird. That and he had like the fucking weirdest look on his face. But he was like, I guess he was like, technically, yes. But why are you asking me this?
That's weird.
Anyways, yeah. Kaladin and Zeth are just fucking falling through the air.
Oh, you could. You guys can't see me, but the entire time when he was introducing, like when Zeth showed up, I was just, like, bouncing in my chair, like, waving my hands in the air, making a steak face.
I could
face.
Hear you, like, hitting your desk. I was very happy that that played. Chapter 33, Burdens. This also has Kaladin's symbol, and the epigraph reads, "But it is not impossible to blend their surges to ours in the end. It has been promised, and it can come. Or do we understand the sum? We question not if they can have us then, but if we dare to have them again." From the Listener Song of Spren, 10th stanza. Kaladin fell with the rain. He clung to the assassin with his one working hand. The assassin suddenly started glowing more powerfully. He has spheres. Kaladin breathed in sharply and light streamed from spheres and pouches at the assassin's waist. As the light streamed into Kaladin, the assassin kicked at him. One handhold was not enough and Kaladin was thrown free. Then he hit. He hit hard. No preparation, no getting his feet beneath him. He smacked against cold, wet stone, and his vision flashed like lightning. It cleared a moment later, and he found himself lying on the rocks at the base of the rise that led to the king's palace. He looked up at the distant light of the hole in the wall above. He'd survived. One question answered, he thought. The stormlight was already working on his skin, which was shredded along his right side. He'd broken something in his shoulder. He could feel its healing as a burning pain that slowly retreated. But his right forearm and hand, faintly lit by the stormlight rising from the rest of him, were still a dull gray. He couldn't feel it. He couldn't even move the fingers. They drooped, limp as he cradled the hand. Nearby, the assassin in white stood up straight in the rain. He'd somehow gotten his feet beneath him and landed, in control with poise. This man had a level of experience with his powers that made Kaladin look like a new recruit. The assassin turned on Kaladin, then stopped short. He spoke softly in a language Kaladin didn't understand. Got to move, Kaladin thought, before he summons that blade again. Unfortunately, he failed to shove down the horror at having lost the hand. No more spear fighting, no more surgery. Both men he had learned to be were now lost to him. Except, he could almost feel. "Did I lash you?" the assassin asked in accented Lethe. "To the ground? But why did you not die falling? No, I must have lashed you upward. Impossible!" He stepped back. A moment of surprise, a moment to live. Perhaps. Kaladin felt the light working, the tempest within straining and pushing. He gritted his teeth and heaved somehow. The color returned to his hand, and feeling cold pain suddenly flooded in his arm, hand, fingers. Light began to stream from his hand. "No," the assassin said. "No!" Whatever Kaladin had done to his hand had consumed much of his light. Still on his knees, gritting his teeth, Kaladin grabbed the knife from his belt. He almost fumbled the weapon as he got it free. He swapped the knife to his offhand. It would have to do. He threw himself to his feet and charged the assassin. The assassin jumped backward, soaring a good 10 feet. He landed with grace, shard blade appearing in his hand. "What are you?" he demanded. "Same thing you are," Kaladin said. "Windrunner." "You can't be!" Kaladin held up the knife. The assassin scrambled backward, eyes as wide as if Kaladin had turned into a chasm fiend. "They told me I was a liar," the assassin screamed. "They told me I was wrong! Zeth, son Volano! Truthless! They named me Truthless!" Kaladin stepped forward as threateningly as he could manage. The assassin scrambled back through a puddle. "Are they back?" he demanded. "Are they all back?" "Yes," Kaladin said. It seemed like the right answer. The answer that would keep him alive, at least. The assassin stared at him a moment longer, then turned and fled. Kaladin watched the glowing form run, then lurch into the sky. He zipped eastward as a streak of light. They named him Truthless. And he seems to think that that isn't true because Kaladin exists.
Huh. Wait, so does he think that he is one of the Radiants because he has these powers, except he actually got his powers from something else? But he thinks he's a Radiant, but then when he said that, when he claimed to be a Radiant, he was cast out and called a liar. Which, I mean, kind of, but more, he was mostly just misled.
His lies, or his status as Truthless is definitely related to the reemergence of the Knights Radiant.
Huh. So there are 10 orders of Radiance, mm-hmm. 10 secret societies, mm-hmm. 10 heralds. Uh-huh. Does that imply that there were 10 of the main gods?
No.
No?
I can just tell you that there aren't 10. I can tell you that 10 is relevant to Roshar specifically.
Oh.
There is a different number that is relevant to the Cosmere as a whole.
Because I was going to say, if there were 10 gods and they even each had like their own champion that was a herald, then that would be interesting, but no.
I will tell you the heralds are specific to honor.
Okay.
I don't mind giving you that.
Oh, they're just his.
They're just his. They are the ten heralds are just honors, and it's just like a Stormlight thing.
Well, then, are the other gods more relevant to the other worlds in the Cosmere then? So, like, Roshar is specifically like honors land, and then there would be another god that's more related to like the Mistborn planet.
Yeah, so. I think I mentioned this when we were finishing out Warbreaker, but the name of the thing that returns the returned is named Endowment.
Oh.
So Endowment is the god of Nalthus.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. So that implies that there are only as many regions or worlds as gods then?
Now, it's not one-to-one. Like, there's three connected to Roshar. Honor, Cultivation, and Odium.
So then less.
That doesn't mean that every god has a planet.
Okay, and then the other thing was, so obviously Spren are pieces broken off from the gods, right? So that would mean they can be broken into many, many aspects that are derived from them, but aren't necessarily part of the whole. And so those aspects can still, you know, bond with a person and create a Radiant. Mm-hmm. Are the gods in this universe the type that's like, they can die, but it's not exactly like permanent? And so like, they can somehow be brought back?
I can't really give you anything more about in that nature.
Because it's like...
Yeah.
Are they all... pieces broken off from honor then?
So
because there are specifically honor spren, but they're not all honor spren.
So they are all. I don't know if they're all of honor. They are sentient investiture. An investiture is the magic of the Cosmere. An investiture is like linked to the different gods.
Yeah.
And so they aren't. It's not like honor died and then the spren were created from the shattering of honor. They're just, yeah. Oh, we went over this. Okay.
It's just like
flakes.
Yeah. But were they all flakes from honor? And if so, then why are only some of them called honor spren? Or are they called honor spren completely separate from the god honor? And they only relate to the concept of honor?
I think the honor spren see themselves as the best child, kind of. They're like, we embody what dad liked best. You get what I'm saying? They kind of have a superiority thing of like, we're the true, like they're.
I don't know how I like that.
It's a little more complex. That doesn't mean that they're right.
Yeah, but still, I'm not sure I like that.
Yeah. They're definitely all of honor to certain extents. It's a little more complicated. I'm honestly not sure I have 100% the answer to your question myself, but it's a little bit more complicated than that. But the honor spren name themselves that. They feel that they are the closest to what honor originally intended.
Yeah, I was just thinking because if there is like if the gods being dead is not like a permanent thing, then that would mean that there would be some way to bring them back. Or some way that they would come back because of the people or because of specific powers. And
so, yeah, this is kind of the reason I've been wanting to do Mistborn, because Mistborn gets a lot more into this.
Okay, well, I guess I'm going to read Mistborn.
Yeah, it takes a while. But eventually Mistborn gets pretty much most of the information we have about the gods of the Cosmere comes from Mistborn.
During part one or part two?
Very end of part one.
Okay.
Like era one.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, okay. That's what I wanted to.
No. Hey, I love that you're having those thoughts. So Zeth fucking flies away. He's like, all right, I'm out of here. I'm having a crisis. And then Kaladin passes out. And he wakes back up and Syl's there and she goes, sleeping when you're supposed to be on guard duty?
Oh, shut up, Syl.
As she always does. Kaladin groaned and sat up. He could move his fingers. His entire hand and forearm ached, but it was the most wonderful ache he'd ever felt. "I healed," he whispered. "I healed from a shard blade wound. Why didn't you tell me I could do that?" "Because I didn't know you could do it until you did it, silly." The voice grew softer. "They were dead, up above." Kaladin nodded. He managed to get to his feet and slowly made his way up to the palace. Part of him feared that he'd find everyone dead. The hallways were silent. No shouts, no guards, nothing. He continued on, feeling alone, until he saw light ahead. "Stop!" called a trembling voice. "Mart of Bridge 4. You in the dark! Identify yourself!" Kaladin continued forward into the light, too exhausted to reply. Mart and Moash stood guard at the door to the king's chambers, along with some of the men from the king's guards. They let out whoops of surprise as they recognized Kaladin. They ushered him into the warmth and light of Elokar's quarters. Here he found Dalinar and Adolin, alive, sitting on the couches. Eth tended their wounds. Renarin slumped in a chair near the corner, his shard blade discarded at his feet like a piece of refuse. The king paced at the back of the room, speaking softly with his mother. Dalinar stood up as Kaladin entered. "By the Almighty's tenth name," Dalinar said. "You're alive?" Kaladin nodded. "How?" Adolin demanded. "You fell. I was barely awake, but I know I saw you fall." "I am a Surgebinder," Kaladin thought as Dalinar looked over at him. "I used Stormlight." He wanted to say the words, but they wouldn't come out. Not in front of Elokar and Adolin. "Storms. I'm a coward." I had a good grip on him," Kaladin said. "I don't know. We tumbled in the air, and when we hit, I wasn't dead." The king nodded. "Didn't you say he stuck to the ceiling?" he said to Adolin. "They probably floated all the way down." "Yeah," Adolin said. "I suppose." "After you landed," the king said. "Did you kill him?" "No. He ran off. He ran off, though. I think he was surprised we fought back as capably as we did." "Capably?" Adolin asked. "We were like three children attacking a chasm fiend with sticks. Stormfather, I've never been routed so soundly in my life." At least we were alerted, the king said. This Bridgman, he makes a good bodyguard. You will be commended, young man. Dalinar stood and crossed the room. How did you know? Dalinar asked. Kaladin met his eyes. Behind him, Adolin glanced over, narrowing his eyes. He looked down at Kaladin's arm and frowned. That one saw something, Kaladin thought, as if he didn't have enough trouble with Adolin as it was. I saw a light moving in the air outside, Kaladin said. I moved by instinct. Syl zipped into the room and looked pointedly at him, frowning. But it wasn't a lie. He had seen a light in the night. Hers. All those years ago, Dalinar said, I dismissed the stories the witnesses told of my brother's assassination. Men walking on walls, others falling up instead of down. Almighty above, what is he? Death, Kaladin whispered. Dalinar nodded. Why has he come back now? Nevani asked. After all these years. He wants to claim me, Alucard said. Kaladin met Dalinar's eyes. The High Prince had heard. This Zeth had not come for the king, but for Dalinar. Dalinar didn't say anything to correct the king, so Kaladin didn't either. What do we do if he comes back? Adolin asked. I don't know, Dalinar said. I don't know. Kaladin forced himself to his feet and took a spear from one of the men at the door. Why are the hallways silent? He asked Moash. Do you know where the servants are? The High Prince, Moash said. Bright Lord Dalinar sent a couple of the men to the servants' quarters to move everyone out. He thought that if the assassin came back, he might start killing indiscriminately. Figured the more people who left the palace, the fewer casualties there would be. Kaladin nodded. Hold here. I need to do something. We cut to Adolin's POV. Adolin slumped in his seat as the bridge boy left. Storming Man seemed to consider himself above Light Eyes. No, the Storming Man seemed to consider himself above the king. He did fight alongside you, part of him said. How many men, light-eyed or dark, would stand so firm against a shardbearer? Troubled, Adolin stared up at the ceiling. He couldn't have seen what he thought he had. He'd been dazed from his fall from the ceiling. Surely the assassin hadn't actually cut Kaladin through the arm with his shard blade. The arm seemed perfectly fine now, after all. He fell with the assassin, Adolin thought. He fought, and he looked like he was wounded, but it turns out he wasn't. Could this all be part of some ruse? Stop it, Adolin thought at himself. You'll get as paranoid as Alucar. He glanced at the king, who was staring at his empty wine cup. Had he really gone through everything in the pitcher? Alucard walked toward his bedroom, where there would be more waiting for him, and pulled open the door. Nevani gasped, causing the king to freeze in place. He turned toward the door. The backside of the wood had been scratched with a knife, jagged lines forming a series of glyphs. Adolin stood up. Several of those were numbers, weren't they? 38 days, Renarin read. The end of all nations. We cut to Kaladin's POV. Kaladin moved tiredly through the palace hallways, where Beld's corpse lay. Kaladin knelt down, rolling the body over. The eyes were burned out. Above those dead eyes remained the tattoos of freedom that Kaladin had designed. Kaladin closed his own eyes. I failed you, he thought. The balding, square-faced man had survived Bridge 4 in the rescue of Dalinar's armies. He'd survived damnation itself, only to fall here, to an assassin with powers he should not have. Kaladin groaned. He died protecting Syl's voice. I should be able to keep them alive, Kaladin said. Why didn't I just let them go free? Why did I bring them to this duty and more death? Someone has to fight. Someone has to protect. They've done enough. They've bled their share. I should banish them all. Dalinar can find different bodyguards. They made the choice. You can't take that from them. Kaladin knelt, struggling with his grief. You have to learn when to care, son. His father's voice. And when to let go. You'll grow calluses. He never had. Storm him. He never had. It was why he'd never made a good surgeon. He couldn't lose patience. And now? Now he killed? Now he was a soldier? How did that make any sense? He hated how good he was at killing. He can do things I can't. The assassin. Is it because I have more words to speak? There are more. You're not ready for them yet, I don't think. Regardless, I think you could already do what he does, with practice. But how is he surge binding? You said that the assassin had no spren. No honor spren would give that creature the means to slaughter as he does. Perspectives can be different among humans. What if the honor spren thought this assassin was doing the right thing? You gave me the means to slaughter Parshendi, to protect. In their eyes, the Parshendi are protecting their kind. To them, I'm the aggressor. Syl sat down. I don't know. Maybe. But no other honor spren are doing what I do. I am the only one who disobeyed. But his shard blade. What of it? Kaladin asked. It was different. Very different. It looked ordinary to me. Well, as ordinary as a shard blade can be. It was different. I feel I should know why. Something about the amount of light he was consuming. Kaladin rose. The assassin had cut that hole with his blade, entered the corridor, and killed Beld. But Kaladin had sent two men on ahead. Yes, another body. Haber. one of the first men Kaladin had saved in Bridge 4. Kaladin remembered saving this man after he had been left by everyone else to die on the plateau. Kaladin knelt beside the corpse, rolled it over, and found it weeping.
I'm sorry, Haber said. I'm sorry, Kaladin. Haber, Kaladin said, you're alive. Then he noticed that the legs of Haber's uniform had been sliced through at mid-thigh. Beneath the fabric, Haber's legs were darkened and gray. Dead. I didn't even see him, Haber said. He cut me down, then stabbed Beld straight through. I listened to you fighting. I thought you'd all died. It's all right, Kaladin said. You're all right. I can't feel my legs. They're gone. I'm no soldier anymore, sir. I'm useless now. No, you're still Bridge 4. You're always Bridge 4. He forced himself to smile. We'll just have Rock teach you how to cook. How are you with stew? Awful, sir, Haber said. I can burn broth. Then you'll fit right in with most military cooks. Come on, let's get you back to the others. Kaladin strained, trying to lift him. His body would have none of it. It's all right, sir, Haber said. No, Kaladin said, sucking in the light of one of the spheres in the lamp. It's not. He heaved again, lifting Haber, then carried him back toward the others. And that is the end of that chapter.
Well, at least one of them's alive.
Yep. If I love Haber.
Paralyzed for life.
Yeah. And we have one more chapter. Chapter 34, Blossoms and Cake. And this one has Shallan's symbol. The epigraph reads, our gods were born of splinters of a soul, of one who seeks to take control, destroys all lands that he beholds with spite. They are his spren, his gift, his price, but the night forms speak of future life, a challenged champion, a strife even he must requite. From the Listener Song of Secrets, final stanza. Shallan reads a dispatch on Tin Span Reed about the political situation in Yakaved and dwells on the consequences for her family if there is a succession war. Tin asks if Shallan personally knows any of the important players for the Vaden throne, but Shallan says she wasn't important enough. Tin says they might want to go to Yakaved to take advantage of the chaos once they are done in the Shattered Plains. The Spanry report continues with information about the deserters and reward bounties from their former leader, Sadius. Shallan is angered that Tin wants to turn them in, and says that she promised them amnesty, but Tin scoffs at this and says that a con artist can't afford to believe their own lies, and that Shallan has no choice or has no chance to get Sadius to forgive the deserters. Shallan is upset at this and worries that she will soon get caught up between the truth and Tin's misguided notions over who Shallan really is. Here now, Tin said. That's some good news. And she's looking at one of the papers. In regards to your mission in Amidlan, it read, our benefactors have written to say that they are pleased. They do want to know if you recovered the information, but I think this is secondary to them. They let slip that they found the information they need elsewhere, something about a city they've been researching. For your part, there is no news of the target surviving. It seems that you worry about the mission's failure is unfounded. Whatever happened aboard the ship, it worked to our favor. The Wind's Pleasure is reported lost with all hands. Yasna Kolin is dead. Yasna Kolin is dead. Shallan gaped, jaw dropping. Maybe those idiots did manage to complete the job, Tin said, satisfied. Looks like I'll be paid after all. Your mission in Amidlan? Shallan whispered.
It was
to assassinate Yasna Kolin?
Oh,
run the operation, at
no.
least, Tin said, distracted. Would have gone myself, but can't stand ships. Those churning seas turned my stomach inside out. Shallan couldn't speak. Tin was an assassin. Tin had been behind the hit on Yasna Kolin. The Spanreed was still writing. Some interesting news. You asked after House Devar in Yakaved. It looks like Yasna, before leaving Cabrant, took a new ward. Shallan reached for the Spanreed. Tin caught her hand. A girl named Shallan. Red hair, pale skin. Nobody knows much about her. Didn't seem important news to our informants until I pried. Shallan looked up just as Tin did, meeting the woman's eyes. Oh, damnation, Tin said. Shallan tried to pull free. Instead, she found herself being hauled off the chair. She couldn't follow Tin's quick motions as the woman slammed her to the ground, face first. The woman's boot followed to Shallan's back, knocking the air from her and throwing a shock through her body. Damnation, Tin said. You're Colin's ward? Where's Yasna? Did she live? Help, Shallan croaked. Tin knelt on Shallan's back, pressing the air from her lungs again. I had my men clear the area around this tent. I was worried about you alerting the deserters that we would turn them in. Stormfather! As Shallan struggled, Tin grabbed her on the shoulder and squeezed hard. Did Yasna live? No, Shallan whispered, tears of pain coming to her eyes. The ship, you may have noticed, Yasna's voice said from behind them, has two very fine cabins which I hired out for us at no small expense. Tin cursed, leaping up and spinning to see who had spoken. It was, of course, Pattern. Shallan didn't give him a glance, but scrambled forward toward the tent wall. Vata and the others were out there, somewhere. If she could just... Tin caught her leg, yanking her backward. I can't escape, a primal part of her thought. Panic surged within Shallan. Powerless. Can't run, can't run, can't run. Fight. Shallan pulled her leg free of Tin and spun, launching herself at the woman. She would not be powerless again. She would not. Tin gasped as Shallan attacked with everything she had. A clawing, angry, frantic mess. It wasn't effective. In moments, she found herself croaking in pain a second time, Tin's fist buried in her stomach. Shallan sank to her knees, tears on her cheeks. Tin cracked her on the side of the head, making her vision go all white. Where did that come from? Tin said. Shallan blinked, looking up, vision swimming. Tin reached up, hand coming away red. Her expression darkened, and she reached to the table where her sword rested in its sheath. What a mess, Tin growled. Storm it. I'm gonna have to invite that Vata here, then find a way to blame this on him. Tin pulled the sword from its sheath. Shallan struggled to her knees, then tried to climb to her feet, but her legs were unsteady. Pattern? She croaked. Pattern? She heard something outside. Shouts? I'm sorry, Tin said. I'm going to have to tie this up tight. In a way, I'm proud of you. You fooled me. You'd have been good at this. Calm, Shallan told herself. Be calm. 10 heartbeats. But for her, it didn't have to be 10, did it? No, it must be. Time. I need time. She had spheres in her sleeve. As Tin approached, Shallan breathed in sharply. She raised her hand, thrusting out with the pulse of light. She couldn't form it into anything, she still didn't know how, but it seemed for a moment to show a rippling image of Shallan, standing proudly like a woman of the court. Tin stopped short at the sight of the projection of light and color. So I'm going mad, Tin said. Hearing things. Seeing things. I guess part of me doesn't want to do this. She advanced, raising her blade. I'm sorry that you have to learn the lesson this way. Sometimes we must do things we don't like, kid. Difficult things. Shallan growled, thrusting her hands forward. Mist twisted and writhed in her hands as a brilliantly silver blade formed there, spearing Tin through the chest. The woman barely had time to gasp in surprise as her eyes burned in her skull. Tin's corpse slid back off the weapon, collapsing in a heap. Difficult things, Shallan growled. Yes, I believe I told you. I've learned that lesson already, thank you. She crawled to her feet, wobbling. The tent flap ripped open and Shallan turned, holding up the shard blade point first toward the opening. Vata, Gaz, and a few other soldiers stopped there in a jumble, weapons bloodied. They looked from Shallan to the corpse on the floor with its burned out eyes, then back to Shallan. She felt numb. She wanted to dismiss the blade, hide it. It was terrible. She did not. She crushed those emotions and hid them deep within. Tin soldiers? Stormfather, Vata said. That night when you pled with us, you could have killed us every one, and the bandits too. You could have done it on your own. Tin's men, Shallan shouted. Dead brightness, Red said. We heard a voice telling us to come get you, and they wouldn't let us pass. Then we heard you screaming, and... Was it the voice of the Almighty? Vata asked in a whisper. It was my spren, Shallan said. That is all you need know. Search this tent. This woman was hired to assassinate me. It was true, after a fashion. There might be records of who hired her. Bring me anything you find with writing in it. As they swarmed in and set to work, Shallan sat down on the stool beside the table. The spanreed still waited there, hovering, paused at the bottom of the page. It needed a new sheet. Shallan dismissed the shard blade. Do not speak of what you saw here to the others, she told Vata and his men. Though they promised quickly, she doubted that would hold for long. Shard blades were near mythical objects, and a woman holding one? Rumors would spread. Just what she needed. You're alive because of that cursed thing, she thought to herself. Again. Stop complaining. She took the spanreed up and changed the paper. After a moment, Tin's distant accomplice started writing again. Your benefactors on the Amitlan job wish to meet with you, the pen wrote. It seems that the Ghost Bloods have something else for you to do. Would you like me to arrange a meeting with them in the war camps? The pen stopped in place, waiting for a response. What had the spanreed said above? That these people, Tin's benefactors, the Ghost Bloods, had found the information they sought? Information about a city?
Of course it was the Ghost Bloods. Ugh. Of course it was.
The people who had killed Yasna, the people who threatened her family, were searching for the city too. Shallan stared at the paper and its words for an extended moment as Vata and his men began pulling clothing out of Tin's trunk, knocking on its sides to find anything hidden. Would you like me to arrange a meeting with them? Shallan took the span read, switched the fabrial setting, then wrote a single word. Yes. The end of part 2.
Of course it was the Ghost Bloods. They were the ones who were, who, what's his face? Capsule was working
for. Capsule worked for, yep.
They finally succeeded.
I don't really like the ghost blood plot line. Mm-hmm. This next part is a lot, going to be a lot of Shallan, like, doing spy stuff and getting in with the ghost bloods. And I'm not a huge fan of that plot line. I think it gets better as it goes along, but I told you part three was the hardest for me to get through when I read the books for the first time. It's because whenever I got to a Shallan chapter, I literally just stopped reading and I had to take like a couple days before I came back to it. Now, a lot of people really like Shallan's Ghostblood plotline, so I might be in the minority. You might end up liking it. I'm going to give it to you as fair a shot as I can. There's a character in that plotline that a lot of people count as, like, their favorite in Stormlight. I don't really care for them myself, but I'm going to deliver it all to you with as fair a shot as I can.
Okay.
And part three is going to be the longest part by far.
Okay.
And once we're done with part three, we get one of my favorite scenes in the entirety of Stormlight. So,
cool.
It's worth it.
Wait, so is the only reason you don't like part three because of Shallan's, but the other perspectives in part three are fine?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I've taken notes for all of part three, and I'm pretty sure that I enjoyed all of Kaladin's perspectives. And the other ones.
It's mostly just probably training or whatever, right?
Yeah, it's fine. There's part three gets weird. We'll talk about it when we get into it. I next week we're gonna get a pretty good feel for it because the interludes are so short that we're also gonna do a couple chapters at the beginning of part three.
Oh yeah,
next
you
week.
Mentioned that.
The interludes are like not even half an episode. So next week we'll still probably be a little bit shorter, but we're also going to get a couple of chapters in from part three. I will tell you now the interludes for next week. The point of views are Esher and I, of course.
Of course.
Zahel.
Oh.
And Toln. Do you remember who Toln is?
Toln.
Toln is the herald that returned at the end of Way of Kings.
Oh, right. Wait, Toln so with an N?
Well, yeah, T-A-L-N.
I think this whole time I've been hearing Tom with an M.
Oh, no, it's T-A-L-N.
Okay.
I think his full name is like Talena Lati Lin, I think is what they call him.
I don't like that. I don't know. Let's go with Tom.
But,
anyway.
But Tom.
And then...
But yeah.
Wait, say the three again.
So, Esher and I, Zahel.
Zahel's,
So,
Vasher. Yeah.
Yes. And Tom.
Interesting.
But yeah, there is... A lot in what we just talked about that is very interesting upon reread. There was something that Shallan said at the end there that possibly, at least when I read it, I was like, that's weird. That's a weird thing to say.
Was it, she doesn't need 10 heartbeats to summon her blade? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, when I read that the first time, I was like, that's weird.
Yep.
I also, when I read this the first time, read the Yasna line, stopped what I was doing, messaged my friend Chad going, I fucking knew she wasn't dead, and then read the next sentence and found out it was pattern imitating her voice. And I was like, God damn it. I literally read her line, closed my book, messaged Chad, and was like, I knew she wasn't dead. And then, because I didn't believe that she was dead for a second when I read the opening of the book. But yeah, when I read that line, I was like, oh, okay. I just got fucking, it's just funny.
And then
that
you texted him back
the
and
next
then
we're
like, oh, never mind.
I was like, okay, whatever, dude. You know, fuck me.
Good job.
I think that's all I have for you. I hope you enjoyed Kaladin and Zeth's first meeting.
Yeah, I clearly did. If you could hear.
Yeah. It will not be their last.
Oh, I'm sure of that.
I also love, I love Zeth so much. I love the little bit of characterization of him seeing Kaladin be irradiant and being like, what the fuck do you mean my entire life is a lie? Like,
I was cast out for nothing.
I think he's tragic. And it's hard to get from other characters' POVs when they're fighting him, because he's an angel of death.
Tragic and in a catchy type of way?
A little bit, yeah. Just like, he's clearly fucked up over the idea that they're a Radiance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and yeah. Because the whole thing of Truthless, like, that we found out in the last book was, like, he is forced to do these murders because he's Truthless.
Well, he's being forced to do these murders because he's Truthless, yes. Because he's a slave.
Yeah. Yes. Truthless makes him a slave and he must do whatever he's told.
And now he's like, I had to be a slave for nothing. I didn't have to murder all these people.
Yeah, it's... Oh boy, Zeth is a fun character. And by fun, I mean cripplingly sad, just like everybody else in these books.
Imagine finding out that all of the murders you had to do because you were a slave. Turns out, you shouldn't have been a slave in the first place.
Yeah, cool. All based on a lie.
Cool.
Or not a lie, but a misjudgment. But yes. Yeah, all right. That's everything I've got for you this week, Mango.
Cool.
You guys can follow me on Twitter at Sean_AFK. Everything that I do is on there. Like I said at the start of the show, at Speak Stormlight is our Twitter account. You guys can join the Discord server. The link to do that is in the bio. And our cover art was done by our good friend Alks. That's at Alks Big Boy on Twitter. That's at ALX_BEEGBOI. And the link also is in the description. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll catch you guys next time. Life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination.